Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons, a Pistons podcast on the Locked On Network. You can follow us on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. While you're there, you can also check out Locked On Lions, a new Detroit Lions podcast hosted by Matt Derry, also part of the Locked On Network. Also check out Today's Fast Break, excellent website for NBA news and analysis. Today I want to talk to you a little bit about narratives. We're going to be talking specifically about the Pistons' two biggest, or at least the ones who are going to make the biggest impact this year, definitely not size-wise, free agent signings, John Luehr and Ish Smith. What do you know about Ish Smith? Before the Pistons signed him, he was famous for one reason. Well, maybe two. He was a little famous in basketball circles, people paying real close attention, because he might have been the fastest player in the NBA. Not the best, but the fastest. He's in the league because he's good with his speed, and he can take advantage of it and do some good things off his speed, but it's all based on his speed. The thing that really made him famous and built up a little bit of a cult following for him was when the 76ers last season started off. What were they, like 1-30? They were bad. 1-30. They sign Ish Smith, and they go 3-3 in their next six games. In those games, Ish Smith averaged 15 points and 8 assists per game. You know, for Philadelphia, 3-3 was like a godsend. They were so bad that they fired Sam Hinkie. Okay. Did not fire. I got to issue a correction before I even get going here. They demoted Sam Hinkie. Can we say that? They demoted him for Jerry Colangelo. Is that fair enough that even the 76ers would accept that retelling of events and basically push Sam Hinkie out? Sam Hinkie resigned because he was stripped of all authority, or at least a large portion of his authority, because they started off 1-30. Sam Hinkie did exactly what he told the 76ers ownership that he was going to do. He was going to value the long term. He was going to try and set up the team to win a championship, take his lumps in the short term. The lumps were just so bad. They were 1-30. Jahlil Okafor was fighting dudes in the streets. It was ugly. And here comes Ish Smith to save the day. 76ers trade a couple second rounders for him. He comes in, 3-3 record. Everything's turning around. 15 points and 8 assists a game. They've got their point guard. Everything's going to start to click now. You've got Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel up front. A competent point guard's doing wonders for them. Nick Stauskas was going to save his career. Robert Covington, everybody's going to really see just how good that guy is. Ish Smith was doing it. And that narrative was set, and that just wasn't reality. You know what the best thing about Ish Smith in Philadelphia was? He wasn't Isaiah Kanaan. That was it. Philadelphia was getting terrible point guard play from Isaiah Kanaan, who was in over his head and not really suited to be a point guard. He was in over his head as a player, starting for any team. But he's more of a shooting guard. He's got the height, 6 foot, of a point guard. But his playing style, he could not do it. He wasn't ready to be a starting shooting guard even if he had the height. Like, he's just a little bit too raw. But point guard, no way. But Ish Smith comes in, puts up those numbers, Philadelphia wins a little bit, and the narrative turns. And it's hard to believe that that didn't factor into the Pistons signing him. I want to read you a quote from Stan Van Gundy. I knew Ish. Reggie Jackson played with him in Oklahoma City. Marcus played with him in Phoenix. Both those guys, best teammate I've ever had. There's a lot to Ish. He brings to the floor great quickness, pushes the ball on the break, gets in the paint, makes plays for other people, really athletic guy. But the other thing he really brings is great energy to your team, and not just physical energy, mental energy. Every single day, he's an upbeat, positive guy that people love being around. He makes coming to the gym better every day. We knew all that about him, and that played into it. We knew we were losing at the time. We didn't know how many, but you knew you were going to lose some veteran guys. So Ish, his intangibles, figures into that a lot, too. Do you believe that if the 76ers went 1-5 or 0-6 in Ish Smith's first games, that the Pistons would have been as enthusiastic about signing him, that they'd view him as such a difference maker in the locker room? Because that was the narrative that got built, that Ish Smith went to Philadelphia and turned everything around, got everybody excited, was just a breath of fresh air, was the first move they had made really since hiring Hinkie. That was about winning sooner than later, the very first one. Everything else Hinkie had done had been about an eye for the long term. Trading 2 second-round picks in a lost season for somebody on an expiring contract, that's a win-now move. That doesn't make any sense, but it's a win-now move. They were desperate, and he lifted the entire franchise in the way they wanted to be lifted at that moment. Might not have been a good idea for them, but that's what they wanted, and he did it. And it fits in this narrative. And I'm wondering if the Pistons maybe overpaid because of that narrative. I think Ish Smith, on the contract he got, about $6 million a year, that's fine. I think I'm not the one to believe in this narrative. I tend to look through these and think sometimes they can get built up in a false way. So I'm not the one to buy it. And I think it's, all right, Ish Smith, $6 million a year, that's fine. So I'm not freaking out about it. I don't think this is cause for panic, but it just makes me question a little bit. On the flip side, though, Stan Van Gundy, like he said, he knows Ish. He coached him in Orlando just a little bit. You know, Ish Smith's been flying from team to team. He didn't spend long in Orlando, and this was as Stan Van Gundy was on his way out, too. But you see a little bit firsthand, and that can go above the narrative. Because guys who are what Stan Van Gundy believes Ish Smith is, the upbeat guys, the guys who practice hard and always have a good mentality, that can be important to a team depending on the team's mindset. You know, some teams it's more important than others. But that could be good. That can be very helpful. My bigger issue with it is it's harder to evaluate that from afar, or even that limited sample that Stan Van Gundy had with Ish Smith in Orlando, where Van Gundy just, you know, saw it. Yeah, it's for a short time. This is the first time Ish Smith's been having any contract security. This is by far his highest paying deal. You know, is that going to hold up? And you're making some projections here. You know, think back to the Joe Dumars days when he traded Chauncey Billups and kept Richard Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, and Hamilton and Prince were terrible team leaders. Like, they brought the team down with their attitude, and Billups in hindsight was very much the glue holding it all together, and a lot of people say you should have known that in foresight, and maybe, but I do think there's a lot of hindsight applied there, that Hamilton and Prince would sulk so much because they weren't used to losing. It was understandable. They weren't used to losing and didn't handle it well. You don't always want guys who handle losing well, but you have to project this a little bit. And it's going to be the same with Ish Smith. We have to project him in this new environment where he's on this higher paying contract. And we'll see how he reacts to it. So the plus side is Stan Van saw him up close in Orlando, got an assessment there. The other endorsement that I think is powerful is Marcus Morris. Because Marcus Morris will straight up tell you how he feels about anything. He's not going to sugarcoat it. Some guys, a lot of guys, you ask him, oh, is that guy a good teammate? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was good. He was nice. He worked hard. I liked him. Got along with everybody. Yeah. And they'll say that about anybody. Might be true. It might not be. But they'll say it. So you get no information from going to that guy. Marcus Morris, he is not that type. He will say whatever is on his mind for better or worse. You go ask him right now. Hey, what do you think about the Suns, how they broke up you and your twin brother? He's been asked about this 1,000 times. Every time. Every single time. I have no respect for Phoenix. What they did was terrible. You know, he'll just bash them. And every time, you know, somebody will write a little about it. There'll be a little bit of a controversy. People say that the Morai are acting a little like babies and that they should grow up and just, you know, deal with it. And they have, you know, Marcus Morris has thrived in Detroit. Markieff did well in Washington late in the year. And, you know, he was up and down the rest of his tenure with the Suns. If you want to nitpick that Markieff should have handled that better, sure. But every time one of them brings it up, it just revisits it. Every time they're asked about it, Marcus Morris will not say, like, I've already answered that. That's been asked and answered. You know, it's time to move on. I've never seen him once say that. Every time, he'll give a soundbite about how he feels about the Suns. What does he think about Brandon Knight? Oh, Brandon Knight's soft. Players don't say that about each other publicly like Marcus Morris does. There are a lot of guys in the NBA who think other guys in the NBA are soft. It's a big league, 400-some players. Some guys think other guys are soft. You don't hear about it all the time. Marcus Morris says it unapologetically. Who should have started for the Suns last year? PJ Tucker or Marcus Morris? The diplomatic answer is something about how both work hard and I would have loved the opportunity to start, whatever. Marcus Morris says, I should have started. He'll just say it. So the fact that he says Ish Smith is the best teammate he ever had, at least this is according to Stan Van Gundy, that would mean something. Like, that's a real endorsement. So that's the luxury of having Marcus Morris on your team. If you want to find out about somebody else, it's a real endorsement. I want to flip the narrative conversation now to John Luehr. Jeff Bauer talked about one of the reasons Detroit signed John Luehr is because he can match up with Kevin Love. And that struck me as a little strange because I don't know if the Pistons are at a point in their team building process where they need to worry about Kevin Love, like a particular player. Yeah, if you want to win the East, you're going to have to get past LeBron and Cleveland, and Kevin Love's a big part of what they do. Again, I don't know what the narrative says about how Kevin Love doesn't fit. Maybe not perfectly, but he helps that team. He's important. He had a nice series at times against the Pistons, and they didn't have a great answer. So Jeff Bauer has talked about, hey, John Luehr matches up with Kevin Love. Now, here's how Stan Van Gundy put it. It's not quite the same, but there's an element to it. I want to read you another quote, and both these quotes came from a couple articles, good articles, recommend you check them out, from Pistons.com, written by Keith Langlois. So here's the Stan Van Gundy quote on John Luehr. The other thing with John that was really, really key to us is who's our small ball five man, and we didn't have that. We were playing Tobias a lot at the four, who's basically a three, or Marcus at the four, who's basically a three. Well, that's fine today's game, stretching him to the four spot, but stretching him into the five spot is a real stretch for a small forward. And who was our guy? Anthony Tolliver, good player, but again, he's only 6'8". He's not even as big as Tobias. So we didn't really have that guy we could go small with. Now we do. Okay, that makes more sense. In the general sense, John Luehr is going to add some talent, allow the team to play a different way. Not sure he's worth the amount they're paying him, but he's going to help the team. And that's the priority. And yeah, there was no other small ball five for those moments. Andre Drummond can't do it. Aaron Baines can't do it. Boban Marjanovic isn't going to be able to do it. Those are big interior centers. John Lewis, not the strongest guy. So even then, I think he might be limited as when he can be your stretch five. But there'll definitely be moments. I mean, when you need a stretch five, you're typically not going against the strongest center anyway. So I don't think that's anything worth freaking out about it if John Lewis is playing a lot of center. When he gets those minutes, they'll probably make sense. And so that's a broader answer about how John Lewis fits. But if you go back to the Kevin Love thing, like, if you narrow it down like that, why do the Pistons feel like they need to match up with Kevin Love? Like, is that something that played a big part? How big of a part did that play? Or how much was it the general flexibility? Like, we don't know. We're not in these front office meetings. It's the same thing with Ish Smith. Like, how much of it is because he helped turn around Philadelphia and because he has a reputation as a great teammate, which might be deserved. Like, I've interviewed Ish Smith one time. It was with the 76ers last year, and it was after his fast start has fizzled. By the way, on his fast start, averaging 15 points a game and 8 assists, he needed 16 shots to get him, and he was turning the ball over 3 times. Like, there was a lot of fool's gold there, and by the end of the year, the 76ers were fine with TJ McConnell running point, or at least as fine as they were with Ish Smith. Like, this was the narrative. And so we don't know how much the narrative factored in the Pistons' thinking with either one. We don't. There are hints of it. There are signs of it. But that could also be a sports writer thing where, you know, you ask questions, you got to get answers and write about things. And Stan Van Gundy might not talk about the advanced breakdowns and scouting they did of Ish Smith and, you know, how we can run different types of pick and rolls and, you know, the very nuanced elements of his game, because that's not what sports writers are asking for. That's not what they want to communicate to the public. And that's not what the Pistons want to communicate to the public, because that's a little bit more proprietary. They can throw out some nice things about Ish Smith being a hard worker and a good teammate. And maybe that's where the focus gets publicly, when it isn't quite that way behind the scenes. But that is how it comes across publicly, and I do think it's fair to question how much that comes into play behind the scenes. So John Lohr, if we're going to buy this narrative that, hey, the Pistons needed a Kevin Love stopper and they needed somebody a little taller than Anthony Tolliver, maybe a little more athletic. Okay, so why do you need a Kevin Love stopper? And I think that might go back to the narrative that was repeated over and over that, yeah, the Pistons got swept by the Cavs in the first round. But man, it was a close first-round series. They played them so tough. And to a certain degree, that's just narrative. Like, you get caught up in it. That series, Cleveland outscored Detroit by 34 points. In the average sweep, the winning team outscores the loser by 46. So yeah, they were closer than average. But nothing to, like, go crazy about. Getting outscored by 34 points, that'd be tied for the 14th closest sweep of all time. Fantastic. Like, you add a little data, a little level-headed analysis to the narrative that the Pistons played them so tough because Stanley Johnson and LeBron got into it. Cavs were a much better team. Like, all right, 34 points over 4 games. That's fine. You know, it's above average. But you still got swept. It was above average for a sweep. Pistons are not ready to tangle with the Cavs in that way where you need to dedicate salary cap space to a Kevin Love stopper. And obviously a LeBron stopper would be the priority. But between Marcus Morris and Stanley Johnson, maybe you hope one of them can at least make LeBron work for it a little bit more, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope gave minutes on him too, but I digress. The idea that you need to match up with Cleveland is based on this narrative that you played Cleveland so tough. When you got swept by a slightly less than average margin of victory, and you still got swept. So I hope the Pistons looked at those two moves, not for the reasons that they've sort of presented them publicly, that's taken the focus, you know, the idea that Ish Smith really stepped in and was excellent as a starter. He wasn't. His numbers came back down to earth. And even the ones that were a little better, his three-point shooting, it's a smallish sample. It's one season. Three-point shooting can bounce around a little bit, and he still shot only 33%. It was, you know, nothing that makes you think he's completely turned the corner on three-point shooting. That's not very good for a guard, below league average. Maybe there are signs there. I mean, it's headed in the right direction. He was a much more of a minus shooter early in his career. But this whole narrative that Ish Smith is this godsend and can light up a room and save a team season, And the idea that the Pistons need a Kevin Love stopper because they're ready to match up with Cleveland because they played them tight last year, These could be two perfectly fine additions. The Pistons might have made the moves for all the right reasons, but what's being put out there publicly, not loving the push to blend the narrative with it. We'll see how the deals turn out. Thanks for listening to Locked On Pistons, part of the Locked On Network. If you want to hear more of me, and of course you do, you can follow us on Audioboom and subscribe on iTunes. While you're there, check out Locked On Lions, also part of the Locked On Network, a podcast by Matt Derry covering the Detroit Lions. And check out Today's Fast Break, a nice website covering the NBA. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.